It's clearly the unthinkable. Really, it clearly is the unthinkable. But both sides apparently had first strike plans drawn up on the table during all those terrible years that I lived through. I got under my desk at school and put my hands over my back of my neck. I knew how to protect myself from an A-bomb, by God! Just kidding. But I did do that. They did have us do it. Do you remember that campaign, Professor?
That's right. And now that it's been so many decades after those horrible years, a lot of this information is being declassified, both from Russia and the United States.
What do we know?
And we know that we came awfully close. They were hotheads arguing for preemptive strike. We know that in 1948, as early as then, during the Berlin crisis, Secretary of Defense, Forrestal, was arguing for a first strike to execute Operation Broiler. Operation Broiler was the plan for a preemptive nuclear first strike on Russia in 1948, with a fleet of old bombers dropping what is called a Mark III atomic bomb on Russia.
Well, would we have done? Would we have hit military targets, obviously, and beyond that, were there plans to hit civilian targets?
The plans list the cities. In fact, again, if you go to the National Archives, you can get these plans. In the 50s, the most elaborate plan was called Operation Off Tackle. All the cities were listed, and it basically says that within 6 hours, the Soviet Union would cease to exist as a functioning nation. All the major cities would be obliterated. And in 1954, there were hotheads within the Joint Chiefs arguing for a preemptive strike. And of course, during the Kennedy administration, people were shocked when they found out that at the height of the Cuban Missile Crisis, there were hotheads again arguing for a preemptive first strike.
I wonder how close to getting their ideas accepted they got.
Well, we know from the transcripts now that have been gradually leaked out of the Cuban Missile Crisis that Kennedy put his foot down and overruled some of the hotheads in his own administration who were saying that, you know, it's neither now or never. Finally, the moment of truth has come.
Uh-huh.
Eisenhower had to deal with the same thing in 1954. There was a subcommittee of the Joint Chiefs of Staff arguing for a preemptive first strike on Russia in 1954.
All right, wouldn't all these plans, Professor, have the likelihood of the outcome? How many million would be dead? How long the geography would be unlivable? And then, of course, there would be a certain amount of retaliation, without question. They'd have launched against us or launched whatever they could have. Did these plans include the possibility of so much success that they literally wouldn't be able to launch back against us?
Well, and again, Russia probably also had similar plans. Who knows for sure?
I'm sure.
But the point you raise is that, yes, in 54, when Eisenhower was presented the option of initiating Operation Off Tackle, they estimated that 735 bombers hitting the radar screens simultaneously at the on the Soviet Union's radar screens,
right,
that in 6 hours they would have total victory, that the Russians may be able to get maybe one Bison or a few Bear bombers off the ground and cause some havoc maybe in Europe, but they wouldn't be able to hit the United States. But they argued that after 54, the Bison and Bear bombers would be able to hit the United States, and the window would close after 1954.
Were they right?
Well, what happened was Eisenhower, very interestingly enough, organized a study group called the Solarium to investigate whether or not this talk of the hotheads was correct or not.
Right.
And the conclusion was, believe it or not, there was no Star Wars in 1954.
Right.
There was no way to shoot down the Bison or Bear bomber.
Right.
As the report mentioned, even Cuban biplanes could reach Florida. So in other words, all these plans had assumed that the Russians could not retaliate. But after 54, they had the Bison and Bear, and they could hit the United States. And so that window was rapidly closing. And after 54, the window closed. It meant that we were now two scorpions in a bottle.
Mm-hmm.
You strike me, I strike you, and we both die in the bottle.
Yes.
But before 54, it was basically, you know, the United States option of nuclear first strike. So
they were right.
After 54, the window closed.
I've got that. But prior to that, they were right. They could have, at that point, struck.
Well, that's what the hotheads in the Eisenhower administration were arguing. John Foster Dulles
that's
was
amazing.
Arguing that we should hit Red China during the Komoimatsu episode.
There would be many today who would say we should have.
Well, it would be chaos. Now we know that it would have set off nuclear winter, by the way. If you hit Russia with 735 bombers dropping an enormous amount of megatonnage, it would not only have sent nuclear fallout over the United States.
Oh, of course.
It would have blackened out the sun.
And for what period of time, with what consequences? Nuclear winter, I've been curious about it. What do you really mean? For how long? What effect on the planet? Would we, in the United States, after attacking Russia like that, living through a nuclear winter, would we survive?
Well, first of all, the dinosaurs were killed off perhaps in a matter of maybe 8 months to a year.
Right.
Because the Commodore meteor hit the Yucatan of Mexico 65 million years ago, lofting several cubic miles of dirt into the air, blocking out sunlight.
Effectively a nuclear winter.
That's right. And, Carl Sagan had estimated that perhaps 100 megatons, very little, that's a tiny fraction of our arsenal, 100 megatons. In fact, we were thinking of dropping 100 megatons on Moscow alone. 100 megatons would be enough to destabilize the atmosphere. Now, the Pentagon did its own study to rebut Carl Sagan, in all fairness. They stated that you would not have a total nuclear winter, you would have nuclear autumn, said the Pentagon. In other words, crops would fail, mass famine, many millions of people would die, but humanity would survive.
Just with 100 megatons?
100 megatons, which is like the tip of your finger in terms of the total arsenal.
Sure.
We had 30,000 atomic and hydrogen bombs at the height of the Cold War, and the Russians did too. That's 60,000 nuclear weapons.
And we've been reducing ours at what sort of rate? What percentage do we have left of what we had at the height?
The strategic bombs have been regulated by arms agreements. And so we're now down to in about 5,000 range. So it's come down.
From 30,000 at the height to 5,000 now.
But that's strategic. We also have small tactical bombs.
May I ask a tough question?
Yeah. Go ahead.
There's going to be a level of criticality as we continue to reduce the number of weapons on each side. At what point, Professor, does it become, in the minds of somebody out there, survivable? In other words, aren't we better having large numbers that would mean suicidal, catastrophic end for all? Isn't it almost better that way than reducing the number to the point where somebody might consider it now something that could be done that would be something less than suicidal?
Well, in the movie Dr. Strangelove, you remember that there was a doomsday machine that would, if the United States struck, then Russia would destroy the entire human race.
Oh, how I remember, yes.
Well, that doomsday machine does exist. It is winter. It is nuclear winter in the sense that anyone that strikes first with the strategic arsenal would set off nuclear winter, which again would plunge humanity to the brink of the Stone Age. Famine would break out, food riots, hundreds of millions would die.
Worldwide.
It would be worldwide.
Worldwide.
And so any nation that, either Russia or the United States, that entertains this possibility would plunge the world into nuclear winter.
Well, all right, let's use the government's calculation of nuclear fall, you said. Well, even if their estimation is true, then how many more megatons to get from fall to winter?
Oh, yeah. Well, again, these people were estimating 100 megatons, and our arsenal is measured in the thousands. You realize that a typical bomb is 1 megaton, a typical bomb.
Right.
And we had 30,000 tactical and strategic nuclear weapons. So we had not just 100 megatons, but thousands of megatons to spare. And so in case of a full-scale war, then all computer programs would say that, yeah, you're talking about something like would kill the dinosaurs. And so you're talking about something that could afflict not just, growing areas and farmland, but the entire population of the Earth. So the human race itself could face extinction if a sizable fraction of these weapons were set off.
Huh.
So it's very sobering. So I think the alternative is to negotiate and bring down these numbers. Right now we're in the thousands, and
I guess what I was asking though, Professor, is wouldn't there be a level of danger when it got too low? Do you follow me?
Well,
if it's sound psychology that it's suicidal and that's why it hasn't happened yet, then bringing it to the point where it might be slightly less than suicidal wouldn't be bright necessarily, would it?
Well, Robert McNamara, the late Secretary of Defense, advocated something called minimal deterrence. That is maybe like 100 warheads. So each side would have 100 warheads, sufficient to perhaps destroy the Earth via nuclear winter. And that would then bring us down to a fairly low level of nuclear bombs, but sufficient, again, to cause havoc with the atmosphere and havoc on the planet Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that, of course, lets the cat out of the bag. These weapons are for political purposes. They're to threaten people.
Yes.
They're to control conventional crises.
Yes.
So like a poker game, the first strike is a royal flush, but it's part of a continuum. So I think we have to realize that the military does not see any big difference between conventional and nuclear. Nuclear is just the royal flush, that's all to them. And politicians view this as a weapon of coercion. Now, the average American doesn't think that way. The average American just says, well, they hit us, we hit them back, period. That's it, end of story. We're John Wayne. We never get angry. We always fire second. They don't realize that nuclear weapons, in some sense, are used every day to threaten, to like a poker game, basically, to threaten an enemy with a royal flush and to create uncertainty in the minds of an adversary. That's why at the beginning of the Gulf War, for example, the first Gulf War back in 91, Newsweek magazine had a big spread laying out the nuclear option, interviewing senior military officials of the first Bush administration, laying out the nuclear option on Iraq.
Can I post a question to you, please?
Yeah.
Let me put you in a position for a moment of being advisor to the president.
Mm-hmm.
And suppose the president received information that Russia was secretly planning a first strike against us. No doubt about it, it was going to happen. Would you counsel a president to, under that, in that situation, initiate a first strike yourself before the Russians hit us, knowing full well they absolutely were going to hit us? Or would you say, no, Mr. President, something's got to be left to the human race, don't do it?
Well, I would say that whoever said there's 100% certainty that the Russians are planning a first strike is probably out of his mind.
Well,
because Russia is in a very sad state, economically speaking. Their economy is in free fall.
Absolutely.
And they can barely keep the arsenal they have intact. They cannot keep bomb scientists in Russia.
But still,
I was in Russia several years ago, and some bomb scientists came up to me and asked me whether or not I could offer them a job. I could have hired right on the spot several top Russian bomb scientists. That's how bad it was.
I know it's awful. I've been there myself. It is really awful, no question about it.
Mm-hmm.
But still,
so I would counsel the president that whoever said it's 100% certainty that Russia is preparing a first strike is out of his mind.
Out of his mind.
Yeah.
You don't think there could, but there could have been, as they spiraled down economically, there was that use it or lose it minute for them, or so. Had to be, right?
Well, yeah, there is a use it or lose it psychology among weaponeers.
Yes, sir.
If you wait too long, then they hit you with a first strike, and you have nothing left for a second strike.
Exactly.
So this is called, you know, counterforce calculus, the calculus of nuclear warfare. But, what was the question now?
The question was, if you couldn't give that answer, in other words, if there was solid, absolute intelligence that you were going to get hit first, could you and would you counsel our own first strike? Just if you had to push yourself into that scenario and couldn't give that answer, I mean, it was obvious they were about to strike us. Would you counsel to strike them first, or is your morality and ethics and thinking go well beyond our borders and just around the world. So you'd answer for the world, not for the U.S.
Well, what I would do is, again, we're talking, I guess, in the 50s, because now, of course, it's not credible. But in the 50s, it was credible.
Yes, sir. Okay.
People did look at the scenario very carefully.
It's okay. So
I would get on the hotline.
Yeah.
I would get on the hotline and say that if you launch your first strike, it's the end of humanity. Whether or not I strike second is irrelevant. The atmosphere will be destabilized. There'll be mass famine throughout the earth. Humanity will be flung thousands of years into the past.
Yes.
And we'll fight World War IV with rocks.
Yes.
As Einstein used to say.
So
I would get on the hotline and tell my counterpart, or recommend that the president talk to his counterpart and say that this is madness, because he's not going to benefit. Every ruler wants to work in his benefit for his country. And it's not in the benefit of an adversary's country to go back to the Stone Age. But that's what we're talking about.
So apparently both sides obviously realize that.
It came very close. I tell you, man, on certain occasions in the 50s, it came very close with people like Curtis LeMay telling people publicly, yes, it came extremely close with people like him arguing for a first strike.
Huh. I know from today's perspective, it's very easy to look back and, I guess vision, it's 2020 and all that when looking in reverse, but at the time, I mean, there were rational arguments perhaps or they would have sounded rational.
That's right. That's why in 54, the recommendation was made for a preemptive first strike through a subcommittee of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, because they said explicitly, you wait any longer, and it's too late. It's too late. The Russians will have operational counterforce capability with the Bison and Bear.
That's a damn powerful, it's a damn powerful argument, and it would take quite a leader to say no.
And it took Eisenhower. Eisenhower looked at the results of Solarium. And he canceled. He canceled all these recommendations from the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And I think it was the wisdom of Eisenhower, believe it or not, who quietly shelved these plans. There was no Star Wars. There was no way to shoot down the Bison and Bear bomber.
So
that's why, of course, some people still want to create Star Wars so they can shoot down the.
In the end, the only thing that kept us from nuclear war was self-interest. That's it.
Self-interest. I think Eisenhower realized that the window had closed, had just closed in 54, with the operational Bison and Bear bombers of the Russians and atomic bombs.
Oh, my goodness.
That's how close it came. Luckily, we made it, but...
Another really hard question for you, Professor, would be, if you were in a position to give the other side, the little bit of help they need to help close that door and prevent what otherwise would happen, would you do such a thing in the interest of the world? Otherwise called spying, I suppose, but...
Well, I think it's in the interest of everybody to wind down the crisis rather than accelerate and proliferate.
You bet.
Wind it down rather than accelerate it.
Professor, hold tight.